Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Good morning, everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show, and this is Brilliant Ideas coming to you once again on a Saturday morning from a remote location. We've got the satellite beaming. We're beaming into your bedrooms, into your computers, wherever you may be sitting. But I have another foodie show for you, exciting foodie show. Today we have, let me get rid of this superhero music. Today we have joining us on the show is Dan the Oyster Man will be joining us shortly in about 20 minutes or so. Be talking about oysters and Chesapeake Bay and aquaculture. And then we also have our singer, country music singer, Sarah Beth from Texas. She'll be joining us. She's an up-and-coming country music singer, and I think everybody will enjoy her music, and she'll be keep you kicking and screaming. And my sidekick, A.A. Ron, will be joining us a little later. He's on a special assignment at the moment, and will be joining us a little bit later during the show. But in the meantime, as you guys always know, we have food news. Here on the Brilliant Ideas Radio with our one and only food news girl, Jersey-style food news girl from New Jersey. We got Laurie, and Laurie should be calling in this morning with some food news to talk about and get us up to date on what's going on in the world of food, and if everything is working right here from the satellites, we should have Laurie. Good morning, Laurie. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's another fine Saturday morning for Brilliant Ideas Radio. And how's everything going on your end?
Everything's going great. Weather's holding up so far. We've had a lot of rain, and they're predicting a lot of rain here in New Jersey, actually through mid-next week. But you know what? It's okay. We'll have a lot of pretty flowers.
That's right. What is it? June showers bring July flowers, or whatever, something like that.
Actually,
but anyway.
It's April and May, but that's okay.
Anyway, speaking of, that's right. July is coming right around the corner. July 4th will be next week. And you got any big plans for July 4th?
My sister will probably have us over. She has a beautiful pool, so we'll all go there. And my mom's birthday is July 1st, so we're going to do like a combination. We have two graduations, my two nephews. So we're doing a big combination party next week. So it'll be fun.
Sounds like fun. And I'll be grilling for sure. You know, the Korean ideas must grill on July 4th. And there'll be some hot dogs and burgers somewhere. So anyway, I guess we should talk about food news. You got any food news up your sleeve today?
I have some fun. I found some fun little tidbits I wanted to talk about. But first, I wanted to mention that I had bought a really nice California Zin, and it cost me around $17, but it's supposed to be really good. I haven't had it yet, but when I bought it, I was thinking of you because the whole thing has flames all over it, and it's called Zin, Earth, Zin, and Fire, so it should taste pretty good. And then the tasting notes, they're kind of up your alley. Chocolate, cherry, and they say blackberry fields forever.
Blackberry Fields Forever. Strawberry Fields Forever. So it's called what again? Earth Zen and Fire?
Earth Zen and Fire. Yep. It's
cool.
A California Zen. The label is gorgeous. So if I have it by next week, we can talk about it. How's that?
Yeah, you need to let us know how it tastes, because just reading the label doesn't do it justice. So you got any food news for us this morning?
Here we go. I have a little tidbit about chickpeas and garbanzo beans.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I can't wait.
Well, see, people, you know, hummus is so popular these days. It's made with chickpeas, and people get confused sometimes, like, should I buy garbanzo beans or chickpeas? So I want them to know that, in fact, they are different legumes. Though they are similar enough, they say that they can be used interchangeably. Garbanzo beans are larger, and they have from the Mediterranean region. And the chickpeas, of course, are smaller, little chicks, and they hail from the Middle East.
Really? I thought they were the same thing.
I know. People think they are, but they are not.
Fact,
I have another little tidbit.
The label does say chickpeas and garbanzo.
I know. Maybe they mix them with some big ones and some small ones when they have the double name on it. I don't know.
Well, how do we know? That's something we need to find out. If they're interchangeable, but then they have them listed separately, but they also on the label it says it together. How do we know?
Who's on first?
Anyway, all right. So garbanzos and chickpeas make hummus. And how do you make hummus exactly? I've never made it myself.
Oh, it's so easy. Hummus is so easy to make. It's just garlic, tahini, chickpeas, and olive oil. Lemon. That's it.
That's something even Gray and Ideas can make.
Yes, you could. Okay, another tidbit. Moving on, as you say. Last week, I called in for just a moment to say hi. I had mentioned that I was shopping and that I was buying kipper snacks. And, Brilliant, do you remember what you said to me?
Well, I said I'd never had kipper snacks, and it sounded like something you would feed a dog.
Well, I had said that they were boneless herring fillets, but
right.
I also buy sardines.
Right.
So for those who do not know the difference between herring and sardines, here you go. There's not a big difference between them. In fact, sardine means small fish. And when they get older and bigger, they're called herring.
Well, wouldn't that be a big difference?
No.
Never mind. That was a sorry joke, but it would be. That one small, one big, that would be a big difference.
Oh, I get it now. It went over my head for a second.
Oh, well. So sardines, you're saying sardines are actually baby herring?
Yes.
I did not know that. I learn something every freaking Saturday on Gray Ideas Radio.
Now you have to have the kipper snacks. You have to try them.
Yeah, I've seen those. I've never had sardines with mustard and crackers, but the kipper snacks, I'll have to try them out.
Snacks.
And I'll let you know next week. I've seen they got them smoky, all different flavors, like smoked flavor and all that. So I'll have to check them out.
Oh, yep. And then what I did was I also did a little note here just to read about how healthy they are. So this way, when you're eating them, even though they taste really good, they're very healthy. So it says, both herring and sardines are very good for us because they provide high levels of heart-healthy omega-3 fatty acids, which essential fats that are also play an important role in normal brain development and function. And research indicates that omega-3 found in the fish oils may help reduce the risk of heart attack, stroke, and cancer. And this is very interesting. It says here, people with high cholesterol, diabetes, PMS, coronary artery disease, breast cancer, memory loss, depression, and arthritis may also benefit from the omega-3 fatty acids that are found in the fish oil.
At least I know what to do with my PMS, so I'll eat some kipper snacks and I'll feel much better.
I never had that.
Sounds a little fishy to me. So what else do you think?
Ask anybody who knows me. Another plus, it says, because they're relatively small and near the bottom of the food chain, herring and sardines don't accumulate the contaminants that are so common in the large predatory fish. Furthermore, these fish haven't been endangered by overfishing as some other species, so you can eat them with a clear environmental conscience. And in fact, since predatory species have been vastly overfished, we have twice as many sardines today as we had 100 years ago.
No kidding.
Isn't that a nice little story?
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. So there's more sardines now than there was 100 years ago, and they are good. I know they are good for you, and probably I should eat more of them, but I will check that out, I'll report back.
You know what? Just in memory of my dad, he grew up almost, I would say, twice a week eating sardines and herring all his life, and he lived to almost 89 years old.
Wow.
So there you go.
There you go.
And he ate hummus. Yep.
There you go.
One more quick little tidbit, and then I can move on if you'd like. Okay. Did you know in 1800, 90% of U.S. workers were farmers? And today, that figure is 3%, and yet we produce far more food per capita now than we did 200 years ago, enough for our own population, plus plenty for export as well.
Well, you know that's a touchy subject for me, and I don't want to go there because I'll tick off half the world, but industrial farming is excellent for, like you just said, 90% were farmers, now only 3% are farming, and it just proves that technology has made a benefit in the farming world. And even though people are getting upset with some of the big agriculture companies right now with their GMOs, or as I call OMGs, I still believe that it's best for us. We're all living longer. We have a good food supply. We feed the world. And if it wasn't for industrial farming, none of that would happen. But I'll get off my soapbox stand, and I'm sure everybody will, who doesn't agree with me will yell at me later. But anyway, so what else you got?
Oh, you're going to laugh at this one. Did you know that eating honey made from the pollen of rhododendrons can trigger heart arrhythmias?
No, I did not know that, but I do have a question. How do we know?
Boy.
How do we don't know? How do we know where the bee's been?
You have to put like a little what do you call those things on them?
What,
like
ankle
little,
bracelet?
When you're on jail term. Is that what the word I'm looking for when you're on jail time?
So
they put them around your ankle.
So bees that get their pollen from rhododendrons. And
wait,
make
what
the
is that word?
That.
Not to change the subject, but what is that word I'm looking for? What is that thing they put around your ankle? What do they call that?
I don't know. That's why I was ignoring you and skipping to the story, because I don't know what they're called. It's called an ankle
bracelet. It's not an ankle bracelet, that's for sure. Anyway, should I continue?
Yes, you should continue. I'm sitting here trying to think how in the heck I'm going to know whether I'm eating honey that came from rhododendrons or not.
This is a really funny story, though. I hate to say it, but cardiologists told a European meeting about an unusual case of what is called mad honey poisoning in two patients they had treated. Two. The father and son from Turkey developed heart-related symptoms after eating honey from the Black Sea region. Although very rare, experts say people should be aware of this possible risk called mad honey poisoning.
You know, by the way, do you realize by reading this story, you're going to freak out several dozen people who will probably never buy honey ever again?
Oh, gosh. Of course.
So go ahead. So they ate some honey that was made from rhododendrons. And what happened to them?
Well, I hope I can say this word. It's called granotoxin interferes with chemical messages in the body, and in this case, it's the heart. The both father and son were admitted to the Izmir emergency department at the same time with symptoms of vomiting and dizziness. heart traces known as ECGs revealed they had potentially dangerous heart rhythm disturbances. The men made a full recovery and were discharged from the hospital a few days after. Dr. Uğur Türk, who treated them, said wide distribution of honey around the world meant that physicians anywhere could potentially be faced with this honey poisoning, although rare.
Unbelievable.
I know.
So now we're going to have to do DNA tests on all of our honey to find out what flowers that the bees have been flying on and what they've been doing to those flowers. Because now, because two guys got sick from it, unbelievable. Okay, next story.
Mm-hmm.
Next story.
Okay. Here's a fun one that you're going to like. Dunkin' Donuts describes its latest menu innovation. I haven't heard about this until I found, I think Sunglass sent me this article. It's a fried egg, cherry wood smoked bacon, which sounds delicious, and they put it inside a glazed donut, and it's for 360 calories.
You know, I actually saw that, and I think Aaron and I talked about that on a previous show. But what amazes me, it's only 350 calories.
I know. I don't understand that. It says a breakfast adaptation has made its way to the big leagues, with Dunkin' saying it will be offered as a permanent menu item at participating restaurants across the country. After some experimentation with the concept at the company's R&D labs, it proved fruitful. Quote, we knew we wanted to offer this nationwide and to be able to give it to our guests just in time for the National Donut Day, which is always the first Friday of every June, which I didn't know until now. Hmm. And it was created by the Salvation Army in 1938 to honor the women who served donuts to the soldiers during World War I.
Really?
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm surprised, because I think like a Whopper and Big Macs and those type, I think they have like, don't they have like 600 or 700 calories? So you're saying I can eat I can eat two Dunkin' Donut glazed donut eggs
with
and bacon sandwich,
whatever
you said was on it.
Bacon. Cherry smoked
wow.
bacon for 360 calories. I know.
I'm all for that.
I guess you'll be running to Dunkin' Donuts after this.
Yes. Definitely. Now, I don't know if you've got this story, but I just read something about, I think Wendy's has just come out with a burger or chicken sandwich, I forget which was, that's on a pretzel roll. Have you seen that?
Oh!
Is that one
that's
of your stories?
One of my stories.
Oh, sorry.
Yes!
I prematurely...
you had time to read my
notes. Bag. Anyway, what?
You had time to read my notes?
No, I didn't actually. I didn't actually read them. I just read that the other day and heard it. So anyway, since I ruined
okay.
your story, so that where who has it? That's Wendy's, right?
It says move over donut buns. Here comes the pretzels. Wendy's started rolling out its premium pretzel bacon cheeseburger, declaring it quote the most anticipated new product in recent history.
I do want to try that out. That sounds really
you know what?
Really good.
Me too. I am definitely going to try that out. It says here, now Sonic Drive-In, I don't know what that is, the Sonic Drive-Ins, they want a piece of the pretzel spotlight too. So on July 1st, the chain will launch two limited-time pretzel dogs, traditional hot dogs but served on soft pretzel buns. And the customers have the choice of lathering them, I like that word, they're going to lather those, with mustard or with bacon and warm melted cheese sauce. Hmm.
Well, Sonic, I believe, is I've seen Sonic's in California. It's like the old-style drive-in where you drive up and you give your order. I don't think they have roller skates, but they come out and give you. So these pretzel dogs, as you call them, are going to be at you said, July 1st?
As of July 1st, I'm on the pretzel.
I got to try that out, too. So I got two things on my agenda. Oh, actually, I got more than that. I got four things on my agenda. I got to go eat a pretzel dog. I got to go to Wendy's and eat their pretzel burger. I got to, Dunkin' Donuts. And I got to go eat Hipper Snacks. And what was the other thing I got to do? Oh, yeah, and I got to make hummus. I got five things to do.
Yep. I could picture my cousin Lizzie. She'd be smothering and lathering that thing with all that bacon.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
So what else do you have? We're almost getting time for our first guest.
Ooh, okay. Well, just real quick, it says we project sales of 15 to 25 pretzel dogs per drive-in day, says Sonic. And it says Wendy's and Sonic are turning to the pretzel buns as a way to add more premium items to their menus, and consumers are looking for bold flavors, new tastes, and value.
Wait a minute. How many did you say?
They predict a sale. This is just Sonic, not Wendy's. Sonic says they predict sales of 15 to 25 per drive-in per day.
That doesn't sound very many. Like very many.
It doesn't sound like a lot, but this Sonic, I don't know who they are.
they're like I said before, they're in California in their drive-thru, but 15
right,
to 25
but
per day. I could probably eat three or four myself.
Are you sure they're just in California? They're not like maybe in Seattle?
No, they're not.
Like,
there,
like more...
there are other places, but I've seen them in California.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, all right, what else you got? He hasn't. Let's see, hold on a second. No, our guest hasn't called in yet, so go ahead. You got another story?
Let's see if I have something. I have some real short ones, some real long ones. Maybe I should. This is a quick one, kind of. Chinese, I hope I say it right, baijiu. Have you heard of this?
Bless you. Bless you.
Chinese baijiu. Baijiu. Dijon. It is a flammable, pungent white liquor averaging 110 proof wallop. And I did not know this, and I'm shocked. It is the world's most consumed form of liquor, thanks to its popularity in China. But for the first time, distillers are looking to develop export markets. And I never heard of it.
Is it made with rice?
No. I'll tell you what the ingredients are in a minute. You're jumping the gun here.
Oh.
According to the International Wine and the Spirit Research, Chinese people drank over 11 billion liters of baijiu in 2012, and the spirit is distilled from sorghum, which is a cereal crop that they say is grown from for food and animal feed, wheat, or rice.
Huh.
It says, there is a major challenge to deal with, though. Baijiu tends to make a terrible first impression. Quote, here you go.
Kind of like me.
Not true. It says, I thought it tasted like paint thinner, and it felt like a liquid lobotomy, said Michael Perlis, manager at the U.S. Meat Export Federation in Beijing. However, like many other things in China, I eventually grew to like it.
Well, that just sounds so wonderful tasting. I can't wait to try it now.
Liquid lobotomy.
Yes, really. And you say it's called baijiu.
Baijiu. B-A-I-J-I-U.
Well, if 11 billion Chinese think it's good, it's got to be good. I think you said 11 billion liters they drank in 2012?
11 billion liters in 2012.
Well, I got to try out some baijiu.
Most consumed liquor in the world.
Huh. It's 11 billion Chinese, so that makes sense.
Well, that does make sense. It says here, baijiu's punch makes it a tough sell in the Western bar culture where people drink on an empty stomach. That's me. I drink my wine for a cocktail. So does its fuel-like odor and its aftertaste. But the history of alcoholic beverages shows that nearly any taste can be acquired. Take tequila, for instance. It has a very unusual flavor compared to most popular spirits.
Yes, that's true.
It does make your clothes fall off, too. Yeah, that's like the song says. I wouldn't know because I don't drink it. I do not. I just can't take tequila.
Well, you're missing a fun time. Hey, our guest is calling in, and I'm going to take a quick break. So I'm going to cut you off on the baijiu note and play a little ad for our sponsor, Big Green Egg. And folks out there, Big Green Egg, if you haven't seen them, check them out on their website, biggreenegg.com. It's a great griller. It's a great smoker. You can do just about anything on it. And we're going to take a brief break here, and we'll be bringing on our next guest. And, Laurie, I guess I'm done with you, so you can go do whatever you
do. Thanks a lot.
Yes.
Have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Take care, and everybody hang tight. We'll be right back after these brief messages.
I'm Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and I'm here to tell you about the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience. The versatility of the Big Green Egg is unmatched as a grill, a smoker, and even an outdoor oven. Sear steaks at 800 degrees, slow smoke a perfect slab of ribs, or even bake a crispy pizza or a pecan pie. That's why I cook on the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience.
Yes, check out the Big Green Egg, as I mentioned before, at biggreenegg.com. You can go on their website. All you got to do is click the location where you are, punch in your zip code, and you can find a dealer near you and check out the Big Green Egg. And you can do everything from ribs to pork to chicken to fish to pies, you name it, on the Big Green Egg. And check it out. We appreciate them sponsoring our show each Saturday. And by the way, if you notice, I pushed the wrong button before I went to the ad, but hope they don't mind. But we got it out there anyway. And let's move along. Let's see here. Do I have my sidekick? Nope, my sidekick's still on his special assignment. He's not here. So, A.A. Ron, if you're listening, hurry up. The show is moving on without you. We've got our next guest, and our next guest is, I call him Dan Dan the Oyster Man, and he's calling from the Chesapeake Bay region, and he's into oysters and aquaculture and all that kind of stuff, and we thought it'd be good to have Dan the Oyster Man to come on the show to talk about what's going on in the oyster business and what's happening in the Chesapeake Bay and if everything's working. Good morning, Dan the Oyster Man. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Mr. Grill.
How are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you this morning?
Oh, we're doing all right. So you are Dan the Oyster Man, and I wanted to have you on the show to have everybody hear a little bit about what's going on in the Chesapeake Bay and what they're doing with aquaculture with oysters and how you got involved and a little bit about what's going on in the industry. So I'm not going to, like, bore everybody with a lot of questions. I'm going to turn you loose and say, Dan, tell us about oysters in the Chesapeake Bay.
Well, I'd love to, Frank, and thanks again for having me.
You're welcome.
You know, I really enjoyed your earlier segment with Lori, especially the segment on the sardines. Just like sardines, oysters have very good dietary benefits too, you know.
Right.
They are a very good substitute for a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs that are on the market these days that are being actively marketed.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they really are, and they're organic. But I guess to answer your question about why I really got involved in oysters, well, I like to think that oysters are helping to save the world.
And how's that?
Did you know that one oyster can filter 55 gallons of water a day?
No, I did not know. I know that I read a long time ago that at one time oysters were so bountiful in, like, the bay and in the sea that they would actually stack up like mountains, and they actually couldn't get ships through some canals and channels because there were so many oysters, and that they said once the oyster disappeared, that's why we have a lot of the pollution we have today.
That's very true. Oysters are about the 3% of what they were back in the days when John Smith first sailed up the bay and met Pocahontas. But aquaculture is a wonderful way of helping to restore the bay, and not only just the bay, but the atmosphere. As I stated, one oyster can filter 55 gallons of water a day. What they're doing is they're eating the algae that's in the bay.
Okay.
The algae is one of the reasons that the bay is so polluted right now. And the algae is a result of all the phosphorus and nitrates that are spilling into the bay from all of our civilized communities that aren't properly disposing of their overflowed wastes and stormwater runoff and such.
Is it from the fertilizer and things that gets into the water and it makes the algae multiply?
Exactly. All the nitrogen, just like if you put it on your garden or you're on your lawn, it makes it grow. It does the same thing with the algae in the bay. And because the oysters have been so overfished and decimated through diseases like dermo and DMX, the fact that the oysters aren't in the bay any longer and are only about 3% of what they used to be, we have a real problem with combating all the extra algae. And the algae is a problem for the habitats of the bay because it shades the bottom. And when the bottom is being shaded, the natural grasses that historically through in the bay, which create habitat for crabs and fish and other wildlife, are unable to be supported. So by having oysters and encouraging more oyster growth in the bay, we're eating a lot of the algae and therefore cleansing the water and promoting the natural ecosystem to somewhat recover. And aquaculture is a wonderful way of trying to restore a lot of the oyster habitat and population that was once very prevalent throughout the bay. The problem with the natural oyster in the bay is that because of all the runoff and sediment, we have a difficult time generating new oyster beds and creating the natural oyster to regenerate itself
right.
Because they get smothered in all the muck.
If I could interrupt you for a second, if you could explain a little bit how oystering has been in the past and the natural oyster and how the oystermen would actually go out and, I guess it gets called tonguing for oysters?
Sure. In the early days of oystering, they would go out in what was known as a skipjack, which was basically a sailboat that had a very shallow draft, but was very easy to maneuver. And they would sail out, and there were two ways that they would farm the oysters. They would either anchor over an oyster bar, and they would do what's called tonguing, which is basically a large, looks kind of like a set of pliers with really, really long handles, probably 30 feet long.
Okay.
And they would go down and scoop up oysters and bring them up onto the boat where they would call them. And that would be the one method that they used of farming them. The other method was they would dredge for them. And they would basically hook up a basket on the back of these sailing vessels. And they would pull the basket behind the boat, which would basically fill up with the, and they'd drag it over top of the oyster reefs, and that would fill up, and they'd haul it into the boat, and that was kind of the more modern way after tonguing. And my goodness, back 100 years ago, that was just unbelievable. I mean, there are entire pieces of land that were virtually built on oyster shells that were processed and shipped all over the world.
Now, are there guys that are still doing it that way?
There are, but it's becoming a dying trade, and the reason is that, well, obviously there are very few natural oysters that are left in the bay.
Right.
And the ones that are there, we're having reserves created by the government to try and promote the regeneration of the reefs, and they're being restricted from being able to fish on those areas.
Hmm.
So that's why I think aquaculture is one of the up-and-coming ways that people who have historically made their living doing it the old-fashioned way are going to have to move toward and start to farm them, basically, as opposed to harvesting them out of the wild. And
well,
there are
a
lot of benefits.
I read a little bit about it online and also went on YouTube, and there's quite a few nice videos about the aquaculture in the Chesapeake Bay on YouTube. And from what I understand, the states of Maryland and Virginia are getting into the act and understand the importance of the oyster and how it cleans the bay. Like you said, 55 gallons of water per oyster is a lot of water that gets cleaned. And now that the states are getting behind the aquaculture programs to kind of help new ventures and also the guys who've been doing it for years to change their methods of the tonguing and go into aquaculture. And I guess that's what you're going to explain now, but it seems like a good thing for the environment and also good to keep the watermen in business.
Yes, it is. And, you know, like anything, change comes slowly. Maryland is a little behind when you get involved with the aquaculture. Virginia has really had a leg up on it for a long time. They've been promoting it for decades virtually. And Maryland has had some aquaculture, but it's really just recently that the legislature in Maryland has created some incentives and made it a little bit easier for a traditional waterman to get some assistance and to lease some bottom out on the bay to promote the aquaculture. But having said that, I think aquaculture is really the wave of the future, and it's really the key to improving the health of the bay. And it not only improves the health of the bay, but it actually helps clean the air, because when you have the proper grasses and habitat growing in the bay, it absorbs the carbon monoxide in the atmosphere just as much as like a forest would. So by promoting the health of the water in the bay and it's another way of combating the carbon monoxide buildup that we're dumping out by burning all of our fossil fuels.
So if a guy wants to get into aquaculture, let's say me who knows nothing about oysters other than I know if you eat them, too many of them, they can have an effect on you. But if I want to if I want to go in the oyster business, how does aquaculture work for oysters, and how is it different, and how do you grow them?
Well, that's a good question. What happens is, interestingly, there is a shortage on oyster shells, and you'll notice probably if you were to observe a lot of the advertising going on by the state that involves aquaculture, there's a big push to recycle oyster shells from all of the oyster bars and restaurants that serve them. But having said that there's a shortage on the shell, there's another way to do it, and that is to literally grow from the larvae oysters that have been selectively bred. And when I say that, they're oysters that have been researched mostly through the Virginia Institute, that actually have been, they breed them and then selectively pull out the ones that survive the diseases and that live the longest and that seem to be the strongest, and then they rebreed them, and then, you know, just much as it's sort of like animal husbandry. And at any rate, when we get these hybrid, I guess you could call them oysters, and we use them to breed the oysters that we grow in the nurseries. And when we grow them in the nurseries, we're able to avoid having to have the shell from the former oyster as it was traditionally done. And we introduce to the larvae some strata, which basically is very microscopic sized particles of oyster shell material that was ground up into very fine powder.
Okay.
And by doing that, the oyster is actually able to generate its own shell, and we avoid having to have a recycled shell. And we can take, and believe it or not, a group of larvae, which would basically fit inside of a golf ball size, and you roughly have about 500,000 larvae in that amount of space.
You're serious?
And
that's small of a space, 500,000?
And we start them on what we call upwellers on a pier, beside the water. And basically, it's like an aquarium you could think of. And we circulate water through it, which feeds them with the algae that they eat. And we're able to control their growth and to help stimulate it to the point where they get to be about the size of your thumbnail. And then we can take them at that size, and we can put them into cages. And there are two ways of doing it. You can either have cages that are floats, and the other alternative way is a cage that sits on the bottom. And it's basically suspended off of the bottom with little legs, which help to promote two things. It keeps them out of the gook, and it also allows more circulation to come around them, which is obviously the fuel that feeds them.
So it's like a little playpen for the oysters.
Exactly. And then one of the things when you're aquaculturing oysters is that they're handled more often. And basically you take and you bring them up out of their cages that they're growing in, and we tumble them. Probably we can grow an oyster. A natural oyster takes probably, to get it to over 3 inches in market size, it would take maybe 3 years for it to get to that size in its natural habitat. When you aquaculture, we're able to get them to about that size in approximately 18 months. And the reason for this is twofold. One, through the breeding that we do, we create a hybrid that is what we call a triploid. And a triploid is essentially a sterile oyster, meaning that it doesn't regenerate in its natural environment. And by creating that hybrid, two things are happening. One, we're growing it out faster, and that's important because because of all the pollution in the bay, there have been two diseases that have been very prevalent and have made the natural oyster have difficulty. And those two diseases are MSX and Dermo. And by growing them at a faster rate, the oyster survives pretty much without being affected by these diseases. Then one of the reasons that they grow so fast is that by creating them to be a triploid, which means basically they're sterile and they don't go into their normal breeding cycle, they put all their energy into growth as opposed to regeneration.
So they literally don't spend their time worrying about screw it around. They just spend their time growing.
That's right.
Hey, wait a minute. Speaking of screw it around, my sidekick is calling and speaking of screw up. and a man who the world is his oyster. Hold on a second. Let me get Aaron on here with us. Good morning, Aaron from Florida. Are you listening to Dan the Oyster Man? I guess I made him mad. Anyway, we lost him, but he'll be back here shortly. So anyway, I'm sorry. There you are. I'm sorry. Did I hurt your feelings?
No, I was just saying I've been really dying with this conversation right now. This is there's so many things that make me happy. I just I don't even know how to begin or where to begin. But I do personally like my oysters that have been sitting in cooks. Just saying, you know, coming right off.
They've been what?
Sitting in cook. They suspend them in cages so they don't sit in gook.
Yeah, but you don't want to.
If you like them gooky, we can always give them some gook for you. That's not a problem.
I like extra gook with oysters, but I am glad that I don't have to have oysters with oyster sperms in them. That makes
that's
me a little
good
happy.
Thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a plus. I like that.
So you don't really like caviar either, probably, right, Aaron?
No, I'm good with caviar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, eggs are different. I can eat eggs. It's the sperms I don't want to eat.
So anyway, speaking of triploids, now that we got Aaron on the line, where were we, Dan?
Sorry. The one thing I'm good for is wrecking a conversation, I can tell you.
Yes.
I think we were just getting ready to shuck.
Yeah, we were getting ready to shuck. All right, so they're in this stage of where they're growing into cages and they're not thinking about fooling around and they're growing fast. And in 18 months, you have yourself about a 3-inch oyster. And you say, now how often
yeah,
you got to go out there and shake them up a little bit?
Well, that's a good question. The reason that we go out and work with them or cultivate them some is by going out and probably 3 or 4, maybe 5 at the most times during their grow out, we'll actually bring in the cages and we'll sort the oysters through a tumbler. And two reasons for that. One, it's nice to be able to group them in the cages by their size so that when we're ready to harvest them, we're able to easily, manage them and package them for shipping because they're obviously a perishable item that need to get as quickly to the end user from the sea as possible. But also, by tumbling them, there's a real benefit as opposed to the natural oyster that really never looks very uniform and is not very consistent in the way that it
looks.
When we aquaculture, by tumbling them, they basically all come out looking almost virtually identical, and they develop a really deep cup because when we tumble it, it knocks off their bill. And by doing that, instead of them growing out real broad, they develop a big belly, which in turn causes the oyster to become very fat.
So when people talk about my
like
beer belly, I'll just tell them I've been tumbled a lot.
There you go.
So they get the big cup on it, and that's how they get the large oyster, because you want the cup.
Right, you get a big fat succulent
to give you a place for them to grow. Okay, I'm with you.
Right, you get a big fat succulent juicy oyster.
Now I got to ask a question. I've had the Chesapeake oyster, and the Chesapeake oyster is more of a sweet oyster, and then I've had the sea oysters, which are more salty. And if that strictly has to do, I'll assume, seems logical to me, it just has to do with the salinity of the water that they're sitting in?
Precisely. Depending on the salinity of the water is going to have a huge impact upon the flavor of the oyster in terms of saltiness. A lot of people like them salty. A lot of people like them sweet. We happen to be in a region on the bay, which is about dead middle of the bay. It's an ideal location because there's a tremendous amount of water flow in this region of the bay. But because it's about middle of the bay, the salinity level is not what it would be, say, down in Chincoteague.
Okay.
So what we do is when people like them, we try and create a product that is good for both kinds of taste. And we have a lot of customers that really enjoy them being very sweet. And for those that enjoy them real salty, we actually can put them into a salt bath, which is basically an aquarium, or some people actually will take them over a short drive over to, like, Snow Hill, where, in fact, there is ocean water as opposed to bay water. And you'll let them go in a cage in the ocean water or in the brine tank for, 48 hours roughly, and obviously they become very salty then.
So let's go. I'm going to go back a little bit. You were talking about there's five. How many? 500,000 of these little. I think they're called. You call them spat, right?
Larvae is where the way they begin.
I guess you got 500,000 larvae, and then they're in this. You said about the size of a golf ball, and then you raise them to the point where you put them in cages. So, like, how many are in a cage by the time they get to? Selling size. I mean, how many oysters are in? How big are these cages?
They're roughly probably 250 to 350 oysters in a cage. The cage is roughly 3 feet by 4 feet in dimension, and it's 6 inches deep.
All right. So then you got them all laying on the bottom of the bay, in these cages like side by side. So. If you're talking 350 into 500,000, that's quite a few cages. It takes up quite a bit of space.
Oh, yeah, hundreds of cages. Your typical oyster farmer will lease a property that's about 5 acres in size, and he lays the cages in rows that are all tethered together. And when you work them, you kind of go right down the line with your boat, and you bring one cage in, you dump it into the tumbler, and as they get sorted, you're dropping the cage, another cage in the rear, and then you're bringing another cage up on the bow.
Now, how many aquaculture oyster growers are there in Maryland now, do you know?
Well, there's probably somewhere, I'd say, between 40 to 60 at the present time. And that number is growing exponentially.
And you said in Virginia they've been doing it for quite a while also?
Yes. Well, there's probably, 100 or more in Virginia that are doing it.
So
and
in a way, it's helping the environment and also saving the animal and making it available to the consumers, because I know oysters are kind of a delicacy even today at the oyster bar or on the half shell. But to me, it's kind of cool. You're making it, there's a fancy word, sustainable, that's the word. It's
that's
sustainable.
True. And a lot of people don't know. A lot of people don't know that live on the bay and have, say, a pier. You get a tax credit from the state of Maryland for $500, so that if you were to go and buy yourself 3 floats for $500 that had spat in them, you can grow enough oysters in 3 floats to more than sustain, a reasonable-sized family of oysters all year long, and you're also helping the bay by growing the oysters, and you get the nice little $500 tax credit.
Now, Aaron says he likes slimy oysters. I just thought about, you got oyster toads out in the bay, right?
Oyster toads? We do.
Can you catch some oyster toads for Aaron, and I'll give you his address, and you can send him some oyster toads? You know what an oyster toad is? Aaron, do you know what that is?
I do not know what an oyster toad is, but I'm not. If Brilliant's telling you to send it to me, I already know I'm not going to like it.
Well, they're not the prettiest looking things, I have to admit.
Oyster toads are a fish that's got this massive mouth on it that, well, if you put your finger in there, I think they can bite your finger off. But I guess they feed on oysters, right, Dan?
Yes, they do. And often the crabbers will pull them up in their crab pots. Of course, they throw them all back in.
But they're nice and slimy and ugly, so I just thought since he likes the slimy, goopy oysters, maybe you should catch some oyster toads and send them to him.
That's a good point. Maybe there's a market for these things in Florida.
Yeah. Well, I think we have some. I think we have toadfish here. We just call them toadfish anytime we're pull one up. But,
well, you know,
yeah,
Aaron, toadfish are different. Like the blowfish, where you scratch the belly and they puff up.
No,
they have those.
I don't know what this fish is actually called, but anytime around we just call it toadfish because it literally looks like a big old bullfrog, slimy and gross.
That's what an oyster toad looks like too. So anyway, Dan, so it sounds like it's an industry, it's an up-and-coming industry. It's good for the bay. It's good for the environment. It's sustainable, and more and more people need to do it. Now, is it you getting any acceptance in the restaurants, and the people seem to be like the chefs?
Oh, yeah, and that's a good question, and I'd like to emphasize to all your listeners that everyone should remember to eat oysters because it's a good thing to help the environment.
Amen to that, and it's also good for you. And I know they got all kinds of omega-3s, and they're also good for your sex life and things like that too. So the little oyster's got lots of benefits.
I don't know how much I'm helping the environment because one sitting for me is one entire cage. So
that's fine. That's good.
I don't know if I'm helping.
Oh, you're helping.
Because
right. that's going to help us to grow some more. And the more we grow, the better the bay becomes.
I will do my very best over the next few months to help you have to grow an entire new fleet of oysters.
Dan,
thank you for joining us on the show, and we appreciate the information about the oyster aquaculture. And make sure to catch some of those oyster toads, and I'll give you the address for Aaron. And you come back anytime and tell us what's going on in oyster land.
Well, Grill Man and Aaron, I appreciate you having me, and it's been a real pleasure.
All right, you take care. Thanks. All right, guys, everybody,
check
out Chesapeake Oysters. You can find them. There's a lot of websites online that you can go to and find out more about the oysters, and sounds like a good program. And welcome to the show, by the way, Aaron. I'm glad you could finally join us.
Yeah, I'm glad I could finally make it. I'm still on my way home.
How are you?
But, yeah. Oh yeah, still haven't made it to the house. So we are mobile broadcasting.
Well, so am I. I mean, I got the satellite beaming, and you're mobile, so we're just completely.
Are you at your remote location, or are you?
I'm at the remote location. Yeah, I should probably tell everybody I'm in a Walmart parking lot.
You know what's crazy is I think we need to post this on peopleofwalmart.com.
Yeah,
picture of you broadcasting
the
radio show on People of Walmart.
You know, I'm thinking about doing that. Wouldn't that be cool? We actually interview the people in the parking lot and tell them on the radio.
Yeah.
I think we'd get some interesting interviews.
I'm sure you could. Very interesting interviews. There is no doubt that there would be some interesting interviews coming.
I think we're going to put that on the agenda. We're going to have a whole segment of what did you just buy at Walmart? I bet that'll be interesting.
This will definitely be better than the regular Walmart commercials. I can promise you. There is no doubt.
In fact, right now, well, no, I probably I'll be nice. But there's some just put it this way. There's some interesting customers in the Walmart parking lot.
Oh no, there are whole websites dedicated to the customers of Walmart. Now, again, I'm a huge proponent of shopping at Walmart.
So am I.
Only because they literally have everything and the price is right.
Yeah.
But they do bring out the best of society.
Yes, they do.
So
and
not only do I get
some
to
of the
shopping,
I'm seeing some of the finest right now.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not only do you get to go grocery shopping and get what you need for the week, but you also it's like dinner and a show. You get to watch all the things going on. That's great.
Well,
you're a great Walmart story.
I'm going to set it up. I am. I'm going to get like a card table, and I'm going to sit out in the parking lot, and I'm going to call people over. It would be great radio.
It would be great radio. It would be great radio when security runs you off.
What?
It will still be great radio when security runs you off.
Yeah, true.
It might even make for the best segment we've ever had. Brilliant Ideas fights Walmart security. Royal Rumble.
Well, we're gonna set that all up. That'll be easy to do because all I gotta do is step outside with it, like a card table, and probably put a sign out and give out like free samples or something. I'll give like mugs or something, and then get them to come over. I'll probably have a whole line
of
people to
come
to. No mugs.
Did you say mum?
No mugs.
Mums. A muffin.
A muffin.
Okay, I'm going. But mums, what are you doing?
All right. Well, we've talked that one to death. Before I go to our break, and we're going to have our next guest, Sarah Beth, I was going to ask you, Aaron, what are you planning for 4th of July?
I really am not sure. I've made absolutely no plans. It's been so busy with work and just really made no plans, but got a couple of options of people throwing down with some nice pool parties and doing a little cooking and a little fireworks. So, you know, I've got some options. I just haven't nailed down a decision yet.
Well, me too. I'm going to be cranking up some hot dogs and burgers, I guess, on the grill. But beyond that, I don't know what I'm doing. And, by the way, before I go to break, I got to say this. And everybody who's, if you see my Facebook page, hold on, Aaron, because here I go. If you see my Facebook page, all I can say is I am just flabbergasted. Cannot believe the crap that's going on with Paula Deen. And I sit enough on Facebook to probably keep my mouth shut here on the radio, but I'll just say it's way, way blown out of proportion. And anybody out there who's never done anything wrong, said anything wrong, and has lived a perfect life, like I said on Facebook last night, then if you show me a person who's done that, and I will get you a tree and lights and a manger and worship you on your birthday, because I've never in my life seen anything like this. Lady is getting run through the ringer, and I believe for no reason. If she said the words, you know, so what? She said it 30 years ago. We all learn by our mistakes, and every one of us have had said things and done things that we're not supposed to. And, I mean, she's getting run through the ringer, Aaron. I mean, now everybody's, like, turning their back on her.
Bailed.
And it makes no damn sense.
Yeah, everybody's bailed. I mean, I know the lawsuit is based on a lot more than just that.
Yeah.
There's a lot to the lawsuit. But that's what media's harping on, and that's what all of these people are harping on, all these big companies that are bailing on it right now. They're all just stuck on that one thing. And, you know, like I've talked about before, and I've even said on my Facebook, it makes no sense, because in every culture, you know, there are things, and people have differences, and people have said things, you know, about different cultures. Not one person in this country is innocent of saying something about another race that shouldn't have been said. Not one.
Exactly.
No,
we've all learned from it, and we're supposed to be getting better, and it seems like every time we make, like, 10 steps forward, we make 30 steps backwards with stuff like this, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Correct.
So anyway.
No, the lady messed up, and nobody's perfect, and she said some things she shouldn't. Should there be some repercussions for it? Probably. But do I think that everybody should bail on her and leave this lady out to dry with as much as she's done to perpetuate the food industry?
I know.
You know, I just I don't understand how, you know, in a blink of an eye, you know, an entire food community can just turn their back on someone who's done so much for the community. It literally blows my mind. It makes me want to go today to go to Lady and Sons and eat five times.
Well, even her book. I mean, her book went to number one, which to me shows that the American public gets it, and they're buying her book on Amazon. And then the publisher decides, because of PC, that they're getting out of not going to publish the book. And it's just like, I'm really disappointed. I'm actually more disappointed in the corporate weenies that are out there that are turning their back on her and have made them millions and millions of dollars. And like you said, she's done more for people like Food Network and things like that. I mean, she's like the queen of one of the, you know, first originators of the food type shows. And
right.
I just don't get it. And I know, like you said, there's more to the story and there's more to the case. And she's got some people working for her, maybe idiots, but she told the truth, which is what you're supposed
right.
to do in court. And even Jimmy Carter,
right.
did you see that? Jimmy Carter agrees with me.
Jimmy Carter.
Now,
yeah.
I think the world is going to turn upside down just for that.
Correct. Correct. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, it's been blown so far out of proportion for what was done, but you have to commend her. And that's where the downside is, because she's not being commended for being honest and telling the truth in court. Even
right.
when you know that there's going to be a negative impact, she still stood there and told the truth. And that says something about her character right there.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, but that's not, no one talks about that. That's not being mentioned, you know,
yeah.
her class and, you know, how that's working. It's only something that was said 30 years ago. You know, when the entire country was in a completely different place than it is today.
Yep.
You know, how do you judge somebody on something like that is what blows my mind.
Yep, I agree, but oh well. I'm hoping that the thing turns around and, you know, she gets back some of her people back as far as corporate sponsors, or gets a new group maybe, and we move past this, but it's just blowing my mind. Every time I read the articles, I'm like, I can't believe it. But anyway, enough of our preaching. And I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to have Sarah Beth calling in. I don't see her number popping up here yet. So I'm going to play one of her songs and take a break. And Sarah Beth, like I said earlier, is from Texas. She's an up-and-coming country music singer. And I want to play her hit song, which is actually the name of her CD. It's called Kicking and Screaming. And hopefully... we're not going to be kicking and screaming when we come back. Hopefully she'll show up here. But this is Sarah Beth. The song is called Kicking and Screaming. We'll be right back after the song.
Time to do it my way. Can you dig it? Live it up and let go. I'm on a mission. Just don't get it. Won't be on the sidelines cheering. Forget it. Can't be a pretty girl. That's just one of the guys. Yeah, I can do anything that they can. And I'm proud of my farmer's tan. The only one that said girls can have to be a man. It's time to do it my way. Can you dig it? Live it up and let go. I'm on a mission. Tries to bring me down, I'll be kicking and screaming. Do 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 do. La da da da. Do 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 do. I'm not just like any other girl.
She's supposed to be calling in for the show, but I'm going to play another one of her songs. and see if I can track her down to get her back on the get on the show here with us. And the new song she's got is called Slow. And I'm going to go fire some emails to find out where she is, make sure she's got the right phone number. So everybody hang tight. This is Sarah Beth, and her song is called Slow. We'll be back, hopefully, with our guests.
I reached out this morning to hold your hand. Oh, stupid me, forgot somehow that you were gone. Sometimes I think I'm losing it, and I don't understand how you walked away without a word, and I'm still holding on. Oh, the truth ain't easy, I don't want to believe.
Lately to make any of the dishes that I absolutely love to make. But I will say the easiest, greatest thing that I have come across is taco soup, because it's like I can freeze the leftovers. I can make it in the crock pot, and it's so easy because I'm usually just cooking for myself. It is my absolute favorite recipe.
What'd you call it? Taco soup?
Taco soup, yes.
How do you make taco soup? It's so easy.
Okay. Basically, you get a pound of hamburger meat, and you just brown that, and then you add a can of corn, a can of Rotel, and I usually go with just the regular Rotel, but you can go mild or spicy, depending on what you like. Let's see, pinto beans, and then a can of pinto beans. Then you add ranch seasoning and taco seasoning, just however. I usually do a tablespoon of each, but you can do it kind of to your liking, and it is phenomenal. It's wonderful.
And then will you take, like, taco shells and, like, crunch them up and break them into your soup?
Well, it depends on how healthy you want to go. If you want to be really healthy, then you don't add cheese, sour cream, and Fritos.
Well, first of all,
you're on the wrong show for saying
Yeah, you're on the wrong show if you want healthy. Yeah, exactly.
No, to make it the best, you definitely add cheese, sour cream, and then I really love Fritos, but you can do any type of tortilla chip that you want. So, it's
Aaron, I can see Aaron right now. He's thinking about it, aren't you, Aaron?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually sitting here trying to think if I have all of those things in my pantry right now.
Well, that's most of the stuff you do.
Yeah, I think I do have most everything in the pantry to make some taco soup.
Yeah,
perfect.
I'll have to try that out. Let me know. Make it tonight.
That
sounds good. You should do a song called Taco Soup.
Taco soup. That would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's kind of got the Texas flair with the taco, with, you know, Tex-Mex and all that, so.
Well, tell us about Sarah Beth and your music career and how you got into music and how long you've been singing and what you're up to and where you're going, where you're headed, and that's a lot to tell us about.
Oh, my gosh. Good grief, how long's your show? The basic story of how I got started, people always ask when I started singing, and honestly, I started singing about the time that I started talking, and I sang Frosty the Snowman, which was Frosty the No Man when I was 18 months old, and so that's kind of whenever it all started. But I think that, like so many people, whenever you're 4 years old, your dream is to be a professional athlete or an actress or a singer. You know, you're going to be the rock star. But then as you get older, those dreams slowly start to fade. And they're like, well, that's not really practical. I'm going to do something. I'll go into business, or I'll, you know, get a degree in something,
right,
and that's what I'll do. And almost like you let your fear kind of take hold of you, and you don't really go for it. So I ended up kind of taking the safe route originally. I went to Baylor, and I got an entrepreneurship degree. And after I graduated, I just didn't know what I wanted to do, because the only thing I was truly passionate about, I love kids, I love traveling, and I love music. And I just really didn't know what I was supposed to be doing with this entrepreneurship degree. And honestly, just the doors for music opened just right in front of me, and it was just obvious. The obvious way that I was supposed to go. And I got hooked up with Dean Sands of the country group Lone Star, that, you know, sings Amaze, My Front Porch Looking In, Walking in Memphis, all those great songs. And
when I saw that about Lone Star, I'm like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've always been one of my favorite bands of country
mm-hmm.
music. When I saw you had that connection, I'm like, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's great, and they're so wonderful. I love all those guys. Like, they're a great group of guys, and just really honest. They're hardworking. I can't say enough great things about that entire group. But Dean especially, my dad actually coached him in basketball whenever he was in high school. So that's kind of how they got reconnected through some business stuff, and that's where the connection came from. But they're awesome. The drummer actually filmed my music video for Kicking and Screaming. So they each are really talented musically, but then they have their gifts outside of music as well. So it's neat to get to know them and get to see all of that kind of come together.
Cool. Now, I have to tell
you,
I understand exactly where you're coming from, because I had hopes and dreams when I was young of being a Chippendale dancer, but I gave that up about 150 pounds ago. And so I know that... it wasn't meant to be, so I ended up on the radio, and that's probably a good place based on the way I look.
But so with your kicking and screaming CD, which has just been recently cut and just introduced, correct?
Yes, it was. It came out in September, but it wasn't actually released the big radio release and all that stuff didn't happen until March. And
okay.
So since March, Kickin' and Screamin', the single, went to radio March 11th. And
okay.
Since then, I've done a lot, went out on radio tour, and have a few more dates to go visit some more radio stations coming up. And it's been really exciting getting to see all the people behind the scenes that are behind your music and supporting your music. And it's neat to get to see them in person, play a song acoustically, and get to chat with the people, like I said, that are behind you and supporting you.
Now, if somebody wants to find your CD, they can go to sarahbethmusic.com, and I assume they can find it on all the other music locations on the Internet.
Exactly, yeah. Sarahbethmusic.com if you want the physical CD, or Amazon.com has the physical CDs as well. If not, pick your poison. iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Rhapsody, anywhere that people like to buy music, they can find Kickin' and Screamin' there.
All right, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to play another one of your songs. We are going to play, it's called Miss You Anywhere. And
yes,
we'll come back.
It's one of the first songs I ever wrote.
Is it really? It's a great song.
It is one of the first songs I ever wrote.
We're going to play that, and we'll come back and chat about what your future plans are and where you're headed, where you're going to concert, other CDs you may be planning, et cetera. So everybody hang tight. This is Sarah Beth, and the song is Miss You Anywhere. So that was the first song, Sarah Beth, that you wrote, huh?
It was one of the first songs. I think it may have been like the third song that I ever wrote. So,
very good night.
Anyways,
that's on the that's on the CD now with the new Kicking and Screaming CD.
It is on the CD. Yes, it is.
Cool. So, what's your plans for the future?
Well, it's funny. We actually had a big talk about that just yesterday. But there's a lot of really exciting shows that I have coming up. One that I'm super excited about is the Gulf Coast Jam, which is down in Panama City Beach, Florida. And it's just really exciting to get to share the stage with some of the huge headliners that they have, like, you know, Toby Keith, Trace Atkins, Daryl Worley, Brantley Gilbert,
wow.
Kit Moore, Tyler Farr. I mean, the list goes on and on. You're looking at the headliner list, and you're like, I get to be on one of the same stages. Is this really happening? But it's exciting. I have Kicking and Screaming, like I said, is at radio, so I'll be doing some more radio promotion stuff. And then there will be a new single that will come out before too long, which will include another music video. And then a full-length album that will come out in September. So I've got seven more songs ready to go, and then heading back into the studio in September to record some more stuff, maybe a Christmas song. So there's a lot in the pipeline.
I was going to say, you sound like you might be just slightly busy.
Just
congratulations on the success. And by the way, you mentioned the videos. You've got the video for Kicking and Screaming, which I posted on my Facebook page the other day. That's a great video. And for those who want to find out more about Sarah Beth, you can find her on YouTube. She's got a YouTube station there at Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth is spelled S-A-R-A-B-E-T-H. You can also find Sarah Beth at sarahbethmusic.com. And Sarah Beth, we appreciate you coming on the show this morning, or this afternoon actually, for you, and tell us a little bit about your music career and where you're headed, and also telling us that great recipe for taco soup. and you are
it's simple. Anyone that's listening can make it, and they can't screw it up unless you burn the taco meat, and I'm that's pretty basic, so hopefully no one will do that.
Well, thank you for joining us, and keep us posted as things move along. When you come out with your new CD, you're always welcome to come back on our show, and we'll play some music and introduce your new music to our listeners, and you're always welcome back.
Sounds great. Well, I hope everyone goes and gets a copy of the Kicking and Screaming EP, and they can jam it out whenever they're cooking out all summer long.
There you go. Well, thanks a lot, Sarah Beth.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to y'all.
All right. Take care. And there you go.
All
check
right,
out our website, sarahbethmusic.com. And Aaron, are you over there stirring a pot of taco soup?
No, I haven't started taco soup yet. I'm sitting in a recliner staring at the ceiling listening to you talking about taco soup.
Oh, well. Well, we're almost out of time here, believe it or not.
Hey,
we are down to what?
Oh, well, speaking of videos, did you see that I posted a video yesterday?
No.
Or
what?
No. Party in the Sticks, Sunset Circus video that we shot here at my house.
Did you really? Is it on YouTube?
Yeah. It is on YouTube. Party
in the
Sticks.
Oh, yeah, check that out. Yeah, because Sunset
and
Circus
YouTube
was on
and
our show.
Reverb Nation. Yeah,
all right, I'll share that.
Yeah, we shot their video here, and we finally released it. There were some things that we wanted to do different, but things just didn't work out, and to add to the video, so we just went ahead and released it as it is. So the Party in the Sticks, the first premiere video for Sunset Circus, is now available.
Are you on the video?
Yeah, a couple of times. I'm in the video. I didn't want to be, but they made me be in there.
That was a busy weekend for you anyway. You were spending your time between the raindrops and cooking, and you sound like that wore you out.
Man, it was what was weird is that Saturday it was rainy and cold. I mean cold, to the point that people were uncomfortable cold. The next day was hot and 70 degrees. It was crazy. It was a crazy weekend. The day we had scheduled for the whole shoot, it rained and was freezing. But, you know, it was a busy weekend. It was a lot of cooking, people coming in, setting up for the video, getting stages set up. We had two stages, one for the band, one for the DJ that played all night long. Huge. I mean, it was nuts. It was crazy out here.
I'll have to check that out on your website, on your Facebook page, and I'll also share it on my Facebook page because they're a great group. And as a matter of fact, that's a great segue. We'll use them as our closing song. I'm going to pick a Sunset Circus song here. I don't have that Kicking in the Sticks. Is it called Kicking in the Sticks or Party in the Sticks?
Party in the Sticks.
I don't have Party in the Sticks, but I've got another song. It's called Everything About You that I'll play as a closing song. And we appreciate everyone joining us each and every Saturday here on the Green Ideas Radio with me and A.A. Ron. And A.A. Ron, enjoy your 4th of July and cook some burgers and some weenies and have a great time over there and shoot off some fireworks and eat some oysters, too, while you're at it. And I'm going to close out the show.
I'm going to need you to send some burgers down. I don't care what
you're
doing.
Yeah, I
got to
work on that.
I need to send some burgers.
Unfortunately, I'm not in the burger business anymore, but I do have the recipe. We'll have to work that out. But thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next Saturday. We've got a whole another crew of foodie friends next week. So we'll close out the show with, like I said earlier, Sunset Circus, Everything About You. Everyone, enjoy your weekend, and have a happy 4th of July.
My breath away, and that sexy smile upon your face, well, it makes my day. Like the way you walk and the way you talk and just how you brush your hair. Guess everything about you, baby, just takes me there. Like the way you move and the way you groove, how every song's your favorite, how the room lights up walk in with your body soft and sweet. Before I start to ramble on, I guess hear what I'm saying. Everything about you, baby, just turns me on. Every little detail, darling, every little song. Every time you call my name, well, feeling strong. I guess that's why I had to write this song. For everything about you. She's my secretary, she's my go-to girl, the one with all the info. Back at home when we're alone, she's my twisted little nympho. She's been known to drink too long. Sometimes she carries on, but she looks at me with those bedroom eyes, and man, it's on. Everything about you, baby, just turns me on. Every little detail, darling, every little song. Every time you call my name, well, feeling strong. I guess that's why I had to sing this song. For everything about you.
Website missing that extra zing? Do you need a radio commercial? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I can help you. Hello, I'm Christopher Trimble, and I am a voiceover artist. I offer these great services: website intros, corporate presentations, audiobooks, radio commercials, and much, much more. Check out my site, www.christophertrimble.com, or you can call 407-556-5506. Once again, that phone number is 407-556-5506. Making noise since 1970.